Next case is on our calendar, 97-18-80-24-23-98-74-98-78-98-984. Mortgage station awarded in city schools at the Board of Regents, Franklin County. We have a recusal by Justice Resnick. She's recused herself. We're very pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Resnick, Judge James Shirk, who is a judge of the Court of Appeals sitting in the 6th District. I want to caution counsel that there are 7 of you who want to argue, as you know, 4 for the appellants and 3 for the appellees. You can share your time. You're going to need to watch the clock because the last person will wind up with no time. I'm not inclined to give you 5 minutes if you haven't saved the time. So we'll see how Mr. Trenum does. Mr. Trenum?
Thank you, Your Honor. If we can please the court, my name is Craig Trenum. We would like to allocate our time on the counter side. I will take 6 minutes, of which I'd like to reserve 1 minute for rebuttal. Your claim to follow 8 minutes, 5 minutes. Ms. Bowers, 4 minutes on the control of 5 minutes. We're ready to move on. The issue presented by the Ameritech case is whether the Sherman Village Association Board of Divisional case holds that the mere verification of a property tax complaint by a non-attorney constitutes unauthorized practice of law, even when the corporate complainant is represented at all times by counsel. The factual background of the American case is very important to the consideration of the applicability of Sherman Village. Factually, the resident case is not counsel prepared, counsel filed. Listed on the face of the complaint on line 3. There is no signature line on the complaint for counsel as such. So we think that satisfies the designation counsel as the listing counsel on line 3.
The counsel prepared the complaint, meaning counsel gathered into facts, put them in the, and then had someone else sign, actually.
That person who signed was the property tax manager, Greg Rishon from America. Counsel requested him to sign because the verification clause requires personal knowledge under oath, which counsel knew from America at that point did not possess. And counsel felt, and that's me, did not feel that I had personal knowledge sufficient to sign this one statement. We simply tried to comply with what we understood the law to be by having the property tax manager, the person who is best positioned to verify the accuracy of the information in the complaint, verify that complaint. Mr. Stein is an employee of the Ameritech Corporation. He's responsible for the property tax and collection of payments to Ameritech and all the subsidiaries. He never appeared on behalf of Ameritech. Counsel made all appearances on behalf of the corporation. Ameritech was at all times represented by counsel. For tax appeals, we considered the jurisdictional challenge based on Sherman Village to our case, concluded that the review by Mr. Stein of the complaint for accuracy and his signature constituted an unauthorized practice of law. We simply don't think that that's what Sherman Village intended. Sherman Village told us that very clearly the preparation and filing of a complaint is the constitutive practice of law. We did it. Counsel prepared, counsel filed, counsel represented the American Corporation at all times. There's been no confusion in anyone's mind whether American Corporation has been represented in any sense by Gregory Johnson. The product of American Corporation is counsel throughout.
the trade name argument?
With regard to the trade name, the Buckeye Foods case, Ameritech Corporation has a registered trade name, which is Ameritech.
And therefore, Sharon Village wouldn't even apply to you.
Well, a trade name, you can bring a lawsuit in a trade name.
Sure.
And
sue and be sued.
Yeah, so we simply filed in the name of Ameritech. I don't think there's any confusion between Ameritech and Ameritech Corporation. You pay your phone bill from Ameritech, it goes to Ameritech Corporation. But if it's a registered trade name, I don't think Buckeye Foods would apply. I think what's important to see happen is the Board of Revision
or the auditors or whoever's made the decision through Sharon Billings way too narrowly, but they could have used the terminology of party affected and forgotten this language about agency.
Who prepared your complaint?
The complaint was prepared by Watergate and Boston.
Non-lawyer?
Non-lawyer.
Who filed the complaint?
He filed the complaint.
Non-lawyer?
Non-lawyer.
Doesn't Sharon Dillage say we hold the preparation and filing of complaint with the Board of Revision on behalf of a taxpayer constitutes the practice of law?
But it was done in Sharon Dillage because it was a third-party tax representative who was not a party concerned.
Yeah, he's saying...
I think that's the distinction that we can make. Sharon Dillage is...
It doesn't really say that, though, does it? It doesn't really say that. It doesn't say the party concerned or third parties. And interestingly enough, that's exactly what the syllabus says.
But I think that's why we would like the court to go back and look at that specific section of the unauthorized practice of law provision, as well as the statute. We feel provide that protection as it is. And I think that by clarification, we'll get to the position where these corporations can file these complaints that are knowledgeable about the facts and can, you know, dispose of these numerous tax complaints to file. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Clay. Ms. Garnishman.
May it please the court, my name is Karen Dollinger, I represent the steel company. My set of facts are more similar to the claims client. The owner of the property, the steel company, President Robert Bishop, did in fact file his own complaint. He prepared the complaint. And so our facts are a little different than their facts. One thing I would draw the court's attention to is the fact at Karen Village, at page 479, the court said, we are not asked to decide whether a taxpayer may prepare and file a complaint with the Board of Revision. Clearly, such action is permissible. We look at Karen Village as a third-party agency issue where it is, in fact, unlawful practice of law for an agent to file. Here we have a majority shareholder, an officer of a corporation filing. But assuming arguendo that this is in fact unlawful practice of law, let's take that look. I think we really have a due process argument as it relates to my client and the other accountants from the standpoint. First of all, look at the form. The form is prepared by the Department of Taxation. You have to use the proper form that is prescribed by the Department. Even after Sharon Village, as of this date, that form has never been changed. Nowhere on that form does it say that you need an attorney to file that complaint if you are a corporation. It doesn't state that at all. It has a signature for a complainant or agent. The backside of the complaint form has no direction. Then look at the statute. Look at 57, 15, 13, and 19. And nowhere in those statutes does it state that you need to have an attorney file. It talks about a person, which can be a corporation, they file a complaint. Then, in our particular instance, we do have a stipulation of fact which shows that at this particular time, when we're going back to tax year 1994, which is complaint filed during calendar year 1995, that's over 2 years before Sharon Village, the Board of Revision, if asked, would tell a corporation that they could file on their own behalf, or they could have an employee of the corporation file. In addition, they would accept for filing the complaint. So here we have, even if a taxpayer would call and ask, look at the form, look at the statute, call for revision, they would not know that they couldn't have filed a complaint. And that's the problem. There was no notice to the property owner, and in this case, the property owner happens to be a small corporation. There's no notice, so we have a due process argument.
In your case, the person who stood up filed a form,
yes, that is correct.
Also majority shareholder.
Absolutely.
Should the rule that you would have us modify, because there really has to be a modification, shareholders to get where you need to go for the reason.
certified, should the rule include allowing a non-lawyer who is then duly authorized by the corporation,
and we have no control over it,
and the request should they be an employee?
I think they should either be an officer of the corporation or an employee of the corporation duly authorized.
I would say
Putting as a private individual. That's correct. It's a lot different than they go outside the corporation to a third party agent. At that point in time, they need to have an attorney. And with that, because the school board issue is a very important issue, I'm going to leave the rest of the major time to the court.
Thank you, Ms. Arkin. Ms. Cole.
My name is Daniel Pollack from our community today on behalf of the Duke High University High School of Education. You can see I'm sitting outside of a podium that has all attorneys for property owners, opposed to the other side that has other respective board of education and public entities. I think what this shows really my case is different than what the cases from the property owners are. There's different in a number of ways. First is different fashion. In our particular case, in the property owner's case, they're dealing with the filing of an initial complaint and the opening of jurisdiction before the Board of Revision. In the case under 5715-19B, which is what the Board of Education is, we're doing nothing more than entering an appearance in a proceeding that's already been opened up by the property owner. That factual difference, I think, is important in this case. Second thing is, we're dealing with different statutory sections. In the property owner's case, they're doing a 5715-19A, as well as 5715-13. We don't have that same agency language in 5715-19B that you'll find in that this court was dealing with under 5715-13.
Could a person in your classification presenting improper information to the board be held for malpractice?
Your Honor,
the answer is no. The answer is no, because you're not an attorney.
I would agree with that, Your Honor. But the difference is, I don't want to elevate, and the statute clearly doesn't mean to elevate form over substance. If you look at 5715-19B, it says it's that filing is made with the board by the Board of Education. They shall be made a party. All that complaint form is under 5715-19B. Unlike the initiation of the case, that just brings in the Board of Education as a party.
Well, as soon as the Board of Education has made a party defendant in a teacher tenure case, then the president of the Board of Education, who runs a steel processing plant, could come here and argue.
No, Your Honor, but I don't think I can equate this to a teacher tenure case. We're dealing with different statutes. We're dealing with different substance.
You're still dealing with the substance of the law and whether or not the law, the court, has control over the people who are, in effect, practicing law or who are arguing the cases.
I guess, Your Honor, it's coming down to now what is the practice of law which you've interpreted in Sharon Dillard. I'm saying that the Sharon Dillard, what you interpret as the practice of law, is not the same thing that we're dealing with in 5715-19B. We're dealing with a different animal. If you look at that statute, and under 5715-19B, the last sentence says, upon the filing of a complaint under this division, the Board of Education or a property owner shall be made a party to the action. Shall be made a party to the action. The key is then, what's a filing? What's a filing with the Board of Education? This court interpreted with the filing law. And the outcome of the penalty case, we determined just 8 months ago that the filing is, and I quote from this court's opinion, the paper is filed when it is delivered to the proper official and by him received and filed. The paper in this case was filed. And Elkham, this court went on to say that paper was void because of the second filing within a transit. Apply the same reasoning here. Even if, for some reason, this complaint form needed to be signed by an attorney as well as by the Board of Education, it is later voided. The fact is, we're already made a party to the proceeding. If we have any other outcome to it, lying in the face of the Elkham decision before this court. But, Your Honor, there's a third reason, though, why there's a difference here. And it really goes to the substance and the rationale of this court in the Sharon Village case. Unlike Sharon Village, this filing by the Board of Education, which merely entered it as a party in the proceedings, does not bar the Board of Education from later filing and subsequent years in the triennial. This was a concern that you had in Sharon Village with an incompetent or improper filing in the first instance, that that would somehow prejudice the property owner because he couldn't then file for later triennial. We don't have that problem in this case. Under the Dublin City School District versus Franklin County Board of Revision, found in a 1992 decision, the Board of Children's Health, the board still can't file within the triennial, even though they filed open amounts in appearance in the initial case. As I stated at the beginning, the other difference is we're not opening up the jurisdiction of the board. It's already open. All in effect, the Board of Education is saying that we want to participate in this case. Another reason this board used in the Sharon Village case was that there needed to be an investigation and examination filed in initial complaint. That's not done in this case. The statute is 30 days to the Board of Education, maybe review 60 complaints. Yes, but there's no distinction between 57, 59,
and 8. Thank you, Mr. Coates. Mr. Blender. Whether they tell us, use their time very well. They set a good example for you.
We'll be hard pressed to follow suit. May it please the court, I'm Charles F. Lander from Midnight Last, December 31st, Department of Record Eckhart. I appear here today about counsel for firm along with Jerry O'Allen and Mary Lester. All of us representing the Worthington City Board of Education and also members Melvin Kemp and Daryl B. Roth. There is a broad land. There, including the state of Ohio, and all out of stuff on the people need for legal counsel in Jackson matters, and also on the stall on the right of the Supreme Court under the statute of the Constitution of Ohio to regulate the practice of law in the state. I refer to the attempts by a number of organizations who tried mainly as non-lawyers to circumvent the decisions of this court, which hold that the preparation and filing of real estate valuation complaints in the 88 County Board of Revision the representation of taxpayers and other parties of interest is the right of law. As such, we cannot be engaged in by one who is not admitted to the bar after rigorous education and testing as well as investigation into the appellant, excuse me, applicant's reputation and character.
Counsel, I think we agree with the premise of this discussion before the earlier case. But in fairness to the taxpayers, perhaps we should have done more, perhaps we should have ordered the tax department to reduce more. Maybe they do things like that, case like that comes out. And which in particular with respect to corporations, as you have a Samaritan. Sounds like they did what people on the other side who have been trying to do. And I can quote personal knowledge
with this
Though it's Ameritech's case. I mean, a lawyer there prepared it and filed it. The only difference is that somebody signed the complaint.
Well, I've read the record and it doesn't say, excuse me, Your Honor, that Mr. Johnson prepared it. There's a suggestion that it was prepared by a lawyer, but Mr. Johnson testified, Mr. Stein didn't say Mr. Trump did it.
Well, Mr. Trump told us today it was what?
Was that he signed it at Mr.
Trenoff's
request.
But Mr. Trenoff told us today that a lawyer prepared it and filed it, didn't he? I'm prepared to accept his professional word. All right, let's assume for a moment he's ethical. The only thing left is the verifying of the complaint.
Yes.
Isn't that a major distinction? That's really not what Sharon Village says. It's the filing, the preparation and filing.
Right.
I just see a distinction between their cases, that's all.
I guess I don't, Your Honor, the reason I don't is because I believe that the forum in which the complaint is filed has a right to rely upon the background of the person who put his signature on there. And I think it's the perfect case to show why they ought to be able to do that. Because in fact, Mr. Stein verified it factually, we were told, was incorrect. He worked for a different corporation that owns the property. He verified that it was owned by Ameritech Corporation when in fact a
have done that and not taken the word of his...
Wouldn't have taken the word
of the client that this is what, where it's located, and this is the kind of building it is.
Our office used to double check that. With respect to the argument that a corporation often has the same opportunity as an individual property owner to have an officer file a member's tax, what's your view on that? If you incorporate, even if you're not only the president, CEO, and sole shareholder, once you incorporate, that's different.
Should be a different deal in terms of the weather management and the special weather. If you want to leave time for Mr.
DeNuzio
and Mr. Collins.
I'll agree with you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Leonard. Mr. DeNuzio?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Timothy Collins. I'm an assistant prosecutor.
I'm not sure you're going to serve, but you're Mr. Collins.
Yes,
thank you.
I represent the Appalachians in the DOJ before the D.C. County Appalachians in the DOJ before the court. I'd like to speak for 2 minutes. It's undisputed that the defense appeal complaint that was filed with our board of division was prepared and filed by a non-attorney officer of the business appeal corporation. It therefore falls squarely within the rule established by this court in Sharon Village, and is subject to dismissal as it was by the Board of Tax Appeals. In Sharon Village, this court clearly held that in the case of a corporation, a complaint must be filed by a regular connected agent who is an attorney. Those facts didn't exist in this court. The Board of Tax Appeals recognized that fact and properly determined that they were without the jurisdiction to hear the appeal of the complaint. The only extenuating circumstance which counsel for the appellant brings before this court, which I think warrants its consideration, is the fact that at the Board of Tax Appeals, a stipulation was prepared by the parties to the appeal and submitted to the Board of Tax Appeals. Counsel for the appellant suggests that the Board of Tax Appeals therefore abused its discretion in ordering that the complaint be dismissed. I disagree with that contention. This court has determined that in cases similar to the Vincent Steele case, the original complaint filed with the Board of Provision was jurisdictionally defective. Therefore, as the Board of Tax Appeals properly determined, they have no jurisdiction to consider the stipulation which was prepared by the party. The stipulation itself does not have any actual effect unless and until it's approved by the Board of Tax Appeals. Therefore, I believe it was properly dismissed and that the ruling Sharon Village applied in this case ought to be affirmed.
The stipulation did continue.
In the stipulation, the parties agreed to allow the subject of tax appeal. And
isn't this really elevating form over substance to hear the taxing authority of the taxpayer in brief, and the person who filed the complaint is a majority shareholder in the corporation? I believe very much the rule we adopted in Sharon Village, but as we make this transition, it seems to me we have perhaps our intended reversion to resolve this issue, and we know it's true.
No, it's a corporate
taxing authority.
You can certainly have a formal response, Your Honor. Again, it goes to the jurisdictional heart of the matter to allow a board or a court to intervene matters where they have absolutely no jurisdiction would impact on the practice of law and the practice before these boards. As Mr. Glander pointed out, these are retrospective applications of the law. This court has determined that the appearance of the Foreign Board of Revision is the practice of law and always has been. Jurisdiction
Mr. Collins, Mr. DiMuglia.
This is what, you know, this is what it's worth. And you as an attorney have looked at
Trust me, I've been through hundreds of these. There is a need in these cases for some to be verifying them. There are a lot of these cases historically that I, that having no marriage should never have been filed. And I think it's a good idea that, the court continue to search and find your real estate situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Canizia.
There's some additional
time. Well, we have something less than 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to point out that under the court's decision in Society Bank of Luke County case, there is a threshold question, and that is, do you qualify the complainant under 5719 to a local 13? And since Ameritech made no showing that it owns property in the county under Section 19A, it was not qualified to maintain the complaint and to prosecute their property for tax payments.
Thank you. Mr. Prentice, use your time. Let me take 30 seconds.
First of all, with regard to the issue of the filing of Ameritech complaints, the BTA found on page 9 of its decision, from the record, it appears that the subject complaint was initially prepared later filed by Craig Travis, retained by Ameritech Corporation. So there is a corresponding fact that we have to file an Ameritech complaint. Second, Mr. Glander's arguments really do not go to the distinction we are suggesting with Sharon Village. What he was arguing is the information in the form that is verified by Craig and Stein is wrong. Two responses to that. Number one, my name is on the complaint. I am responsible if that information is wrong, and there is a consequence if that information is wrong. Secondly, the issue really that he's getting at is whether Ameritech is a party affected pursuant to 5715-13. The Board of Tax Appeals addressed that earlier in this case. It ultimately vacated that decision because of Sharon Village, but it's found that Ameritech is party affected because it owned the high level health, which is what the title holder really didn't question. They have a close corporation agreement, which was entered into evidence before the BTA at hearing. They're substantially integrated between their administrative and managerial functions. Your telephone calls go through Ohio Bell telephone switching stations and property of Ohio Bell, which can be built.
You've used your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised for our opinion.